that. Hi, everybody. It's really, really good to see you here this morning. I don't know what to say, really. I really feel like speaking this morning. I'd rather just have a conversation. Okay, I'll do my talk. How's that? Okay, so I was going to start by telling you a story. Some of you have probably heard this before, but it's a story from the Zen tradition, and it's a story about this very, very important man that went to see this very wise teacher in the Zen tradition. And the man came to the teacher and he said, "Sir, I know a lot. I know very much about many things, but I feel that you have something to offer me, so I'm going to sit and listen to what you have to say." And the teacher said, "Okay, that's fine, but first let me pour you a cup of tea." And so he got out the cups and he poured the tea, and the man was holding his tea, and the teacher was pouring the tea into the cup, and it was getting near the top, and the man was starting to get nervous, and then it overflowed into the saucer, and he was getting more nervous, and then it started overflowing onto the floor, onto the ground. And the man said, "What are you doing? What are you doing? You're pouring way too much tea. You're wasting it." And the teacher said, "This cup that you're holding is like your mind. Your mind is too full, and anything that I could pour in there would be wasted." So my question for you this morning is, are you full of it? Raise your hand if you're full of something. Okay, everybody. All right. So, you know, I'd see these stories as allegorical, meaning that they're symbolic, that they represent other things in our life. And really, you know, in this church, we don't really worship a teacher. By all means, do not worship me. I am not worshipable because I'm just very human and very ordinary and just like anybody else. But we don't really worship a teacher per se. We worship absolute reality. I would say that absolute reality, which is the reality of wholeness that encompasses all things, that embraces all things, is our guru. That is our teacher. And it shows up in our life. But wouldn't you know it, that absolute reality is constantly trying to pour grace and goodness and love and wonder into us, but we are full of something that prevents the full realization of that. And so this talk this morning, this message, is called "Empty is the New Full." In order to receive absolute reality and the grace that it has to offer, we need to empty ourselves of something. And that's a very, very individual process. It's a very individual decision or choice as to what it is that we will empty ourselves of. In my own life this week, I've observed that I've been full of many things, full of insult, injury, indignation at times, full of what I would call myopic despair, thinking that my view of what the world is doing is the only view, and maybe there's a broader view, but I can't see that when I'm myopic about what's going on, right? And I've also been full of fear, manifested as procrastination. I have two writing deadlines coming up, and I'm telling you, on Thursday was my day I was going to get started. That was my drop-dead day. I had to get started that day, and I came to the church to sign some documents and to do some things with Annette, and I was like a baboon clutching at things in the social hall, looking for things to do other than start my writing process, you know? So those were mine: insult, injury, indignation, fear, myopic despair. There's also judgment, there's criticism, there's argument, there's self-hatred. We're all full of those things much of the time. And this morning it's about learning how to empty ourselves of those things so that we can realize and recognize and receive the wonder and the goodness that is available for us always. Not just some of the time, but always. Do you believe that? That there is good for us available always in all conditions, and the only thing standing in the way is our own fullness of things that don't really matter? There's another story that's been playing in my mind lately, and this is from a wonderful book that blends Hinduism and Christianity. It's called The Sermon on the Mount According to Vedanta. Vedanta is an aspect of Hinduism. And in this story, there is this wise guru, again, another wise guru, who is out doing his guru things. He's teaching and meditating and walking through nature and enjoying the beauty that life has to offer. And while he's out, a thief comes to his humble hut, and he takes a few of the few meager possessions that the guru has. Now, the guru comes back from his meditation, and he sees the thief crossing his threshold, and he's carrying all of his possessions, all of the guru's possessions. And the guru wonders about that, and the thief panics, and he charges over the threshold out the door, and as he charges out the door, he drops a broom. And what does the guru do? He picks up the broom. Not to beat him, not to beat the thief, but he runs after the thief and he says, "Sir, my brother, you forgot this. This is yours." Now, I've told that story in church before, and afterwards I often get comments, "So that means we're supposed to, like, give away all our stuff? You know, if somebody steals my stuff, I'm supposed to give them something else?" I don't think that's the right interpretation, at least I hope not. we had a theft at the church recently, and it wasn't a big theft, but it worked my nerves a little bit. You know, many of you who come here regularly know that we have a bunny situation going on in the backyard. It's on purpose. We have rabbits on purpose, by the way. And Emma and Waldo are their names, and they're the church bunnies, and they're our little ambassadors of kindness. And it's been quite a process getting them all set up and getting all the care set up and getting everything set up with them. And one of the things that we did was the bunnies, of course, need their water changed every day, so there's this water key that turns on our faucet, and we had that chained to the faucet so that the bunny caretakers could get them water and give the bunnies their drink every day. Well, what happened was somebody stole the water key. I appreciate your outrage. I appreciate that. Now, we do have security cameras, and we looked at the security tape, and we saw a guy that we didn't know that worked very hard to get that key off of the chain and to take it. I'm laughing at everybody shaking their heads like, "Oh my God." Now, it was only a little water key, and I still didn't like it that he took it. I did not run after him and say, "Here's the hose, take that too." "And here's the keys to my car, take that as well," right? No. Now, I'll tell you what happened with him for just in just a little while, and it has a very happy ending, I suppose you could call it, where the transformation happened in me. I don't know where the water key is, but transformation happened in those that were managing the situation. But back to that guru that had his stuff stolen and he ran after the guy with the broom. What allowed the guru to be able to do that? What form of emptiness where his possessions didn't even matter to him? What allowed him to do that, to give away everything that he had? What was that emptiness? And I would say that he was so grounded in the absolute through his years of practice of meditation, through his years of receiving grace, that he actually didn't feel empty at all. He felt full of that which matters most. And his possessions meant nothing to him. He knew that his happiness was not in his possessions. And so for him, that was a way of continuing to empty himself by giving that broom and affirming that his fullness, that his source, that his goodness comes from God. You know, a famous Fred Mondragon quote that I will, he's like, "What?" that I will say today because it was his birthday yesterday. It was, "God is my only source." I remember Maggie spoke about that in her testimonial. "God is my only source." And the guru was so grounded in that he knew that it was fine to give the broom to the guy who probably needed it more than him. And by the way, I forgot to tell you the ending of that story. When the guru gave the broom to the guy, to the thief fell on his knees and became devoted to the guru for the rest of his life and never stole again. Aha. Okay. So what does this mean for us? Because again, you know, when the water key guy stole the water key, I didn't run after him with a hose. We don't have to do that. It means something individual for everybody, and it just means giving up something that holds you back from your experience of absolute reality. emptying yourself of that to become full, to become compassionate, to become generous. You know, one of the things that I noticed in the guru story is that the guru gave permission to the thief. He gave the thief permission to do exactly what he was doing. In the story that Hugh read about the girl who was grumpy, right? Ajahn Brahm, the author of our featured book this month, Don't Worry, Be Grumpy, Ajahn Brahm gave her permission to be grumpy, and something happened when he gave her permission. Her grumpiness dissipated, and she started laughing. What about us? You know, the thing that's been coming up for me most this week as I've been contemplating this talk is that when I said that I was full of certain things, and perhaps some of you were full of these things too, is the fullness of feeling like I'm being insulted or being injured in some way, verbally injured, or indignation, righteous indignation. Anybody feel that this week at all? Okay. I've been around a lot of people this week, too, who are feeling the same way. People who have people that are mad at them and they're upset because that person's mad at them, or people that are being criticized and judged by others. And believe it or not, sometimes people will say bad things about me. Shocking as that may seem. You know, I've told you several of my famous drive-by stories of the waiting at the back of the church, and the people will come by, everybody shaking my hand, hugging somebody, you suck, bye, you know, in so many words. The guy who called me a hypocrite because I opened my eyes during meditation, and I did not think at the time to say, how did you know that my eyes were open during meditation? So I've been receiving some of that this week, and oh my gosh, this idea of giving permission has helped me so much, and I hope it helps you too. If you're ever struggling with somebody who's being critical or judgmental of you, because in terms of giving permission, what I have found is to just breathe and to say to myself, that person has my permission to think whatever they want to think about me. You know, the thing about that is with the thief, And the guru, the guru is giving his stuff away. If you give your stuff away, nobody can take it from you. And the thing with permission, with people that are critical, if you give your soul away, nobody can steal your soul. They can't take it from you. And so in giving permission for somebody to think anything that they want to think about me, or even say anything that they want to say about me, there's a liberation to that. It's an affirmation that what you say about me, you know, it's none of my business, that famous Terry Cole Whitaker quote, what you say about me has very, very, very little to do with me, unless it does, and when I'm in a more objective place, I can see if it is something about me, and I can change that if I need to. But really, what is said about others, said about you, said about me by other people has very little to do with us. It has to do with the speaker's perspective. And when we give permission, not that they need it, but we give permission for them to say or think anything that they want about us, it liberates us from wrestling with the fight, wrestling with trying to get them in our minds to change their minds about us, right? Has anyone ever done that? Somebody has criticized you and you have many, many, many imaginary conversations about how that person doesn't recognize how magnificent you are, right? I got criticized once by by somebody who didn't like the behavior of my dog, and I swear I carried her 6 miles up and 6 miles back. Not the dog, not the person, but the story. And then I woke up and it was in bed with me too, in the middle of the night, rehearsing that story over and over again. When we say, this person can say or think or do whatever they want, and it doesn't have anything to do with me, that liberates us. So that is becoming empty to become full. Because you become full of liberation. And the other thing that happens is that you become full of grace. There are subtleties to this practice. There's the subtlety of recognizing when you are doing it from a pure place. You know? If you're saying, I give you permission to say anything that you want about me, and not really coming from that place of centeredness, it's not something that we do to try and change the other person. We do it to change ourselves, to liberate ourselves. The other person is imprisoned by their own attitude, and that's their business. But we do it to liberate ourselves. And the other thing that I've found that happens when I do this practice of giving people permission in my mind to say anything that they want about me, to feel anything that they want about me, to think anything that they want about me, is I find that I have great compassion for them. There's a scene from a movie. It's called the movie La Cage aux Folles. You've seen that, right? The Birdcage was the American version of it. And in the American version, Nathan Lane and what's his name? Robin Williams, thank you. Robin Williams were the couple, the gay couple that were married, and at one point somebody insults Nathan Lane and Robin Williams comes in and defends his honor, and he gets beat up by the person because he's much bigger and stronger than him. And Nathan Lane is soothing him afterwards, and he said, "Oh, that big man with the huge muscles, he looked so silly when he was beating your head on the ground." And I gotta tell you, you know, when people are critical of me and I'm in this place of emptiness, it's like, "Oh, you don't mean that. You don't want to be that way. You look so silly when you're beating me up like that. Come on, come on." I'm not saying that to them. That would probably not fly. But that's how we can feel. We can recognize that the challenge is with them. It's not with us. Again, unless it is, and then we change it, right? We're just much more open to listening if there is something, some feedback that is valuable for us. So there's all of that. There's all of that, the idea of giving permission for people to have whatever feelings that they want. And that's just a tiny tip of the iceberg. This is like a whole year's worth of talks about emptying ourselves. What happens often when I give these talks like this about emptying and giving permission is that people get confused and they think it means that you can't have any boundaries. Right? They think it means that you should be a doormat and let people walk all over you. Anybody here ever be a doormat and let people walk? Okay. I don't need to know. I don't need to know. God knows. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you what we did with the water key guy, the guy who stole the water key. Okay. We had him on film. We knew his face. Some of the people in the early morning meeting knew who he was. And rather than just say, you know, "Here's the hose, here's the key to the car, here's the key to the church, knock yourself out," we decided that we were going to approach him. And the reason that I wanted to approach him, I had done the spiritual work and had come to a place of compassion. And there was this other added element, too, where he looked like he might be harassing the bunnies, too, which didn't make me particularly happy. But when I looked at the film, he wasn't. He was just showing his dog the bunnies. And the bunnies were like, "Hey, your dog." They were pretty excited. But anyway, what we decided to do was just enlist the support of one of the 12-step groups to have a conversation with him. So what could have been a confrontation turned into a conversation. And that's often what happens when we give permission to be to people to be who they are, to say what they want to say, to be as critical of us as they want to be. It often turns into a conversation versus a confrontation. And if the conversation doesn't go well, it can also turn into a bigger boundary. It can turn into, you know, "I need a free zone in my life, and you probably shouldn't cross this line because it doesn't work for either one of us." And you see how there's no malice in that? There's only emptiness in that. There's only willingness to know that even a good boundary is grace expressing and love expressing in a wonderful, beautiful way. You know, if you give grace away, people cannot take it from you. Just give it constantly. Give it and give it and give it and give it. The last thing that I want to say is back to the idea of compassion for the people that harm us. You know, there's those beautiful paradoxes that Jesus spoke about in the Sermon on the Mount. And he talked about, love your enemies, bless those who curse you. Do good to those who... love those who hate you. No, it's love your enemies. What? Pray for those who use you despitefully and do good to those who harm you. Okay? So it's love, do good, pray, bless. Right? Those things. To people who are acting like, you know, somebody say a bad word. What? We do it again? I only heard Hughes. What? What? Pests? What? Okay. Hughes was a lot worse. but many of you have heard me say it. Yeah. So you know, the reason that we can do all of those things is that they too are love in disguise. I keep going back to that Rumi quote. I'm going to read it to you. It was in the sacred reading for last week, and Norm spoke about it in his testimonial. And it is, love needs to love. Love so needs to love that it will endure almost anything, even abuse, just a flicker for a moment. And I would paraphrase that in the context of this talk, is that love so needs to teach us about love, about loving beyond appearances, that it will show up in disguise so that we may learn to empty ourselves and to love and to move into that state of grace that is our birthright, that is who we really are. We sing that song, I am remembering who I am, every Sunday, and that is to draw us back into the center of love that we are, where we are love, where we share love, and where we serve love. And if we do it here, and if we support one another in this endeavor to empty ourselves so that we may more fully be love, serve love, and share love. Then the whole world changes. The whole world becomes love. We see love wherever we look because it's there and it's true. Let's do that right now and let us pray.